Welcome to the 2-Bit Podcast, a podcast about two former college roommates finding their way in the land of game design. I'm Callahan.
And I'm James.
Today we wanted to discuss what we like and dislike about the medium of both board games and video games, which one of the two we prefer, and why we prefer the one that we prefer. But first, we actually wanted to talk a little bit about what we have going on in life. Personally, recently I graduated college, and so it's been a crazy, crazy time since then. I've been traveling some around the country, down to Ohio, all that kind of fun stuff. I've been spending a lot of time searching for a boring adult office desk job so I can support myself and start paying off all those loans I built up while I was at college.
That's a pipe dream, Cal.
Yeah, exactly. One day, my 30-year loans will be paid off, you know, right? But beyond that, I found a temporary full-time job, so it's not exactly what I'd like to be doing, but it's money, and money is what I need the most right now. So, James, what have you been up to?
It sort of starts out similar. I mean, we graduated from the same college on the same day, so that's sort of really coincidental, I'd say. But then I sort of sat around for about a month while my fiance finished up wedding planning 2,000 miles away. But then I drove across the U.S. with my parents, and that was quite the experience. I'll just leave it at that. 40 hours of experience. Then I got married right afterwards to now my lovely wife, Tasha, who is sitting right next to me, but you probably won't hear her unless she really wants to pipe in. And then after we got married, sort of made our way back up the state of California over to our new apartment in Silicon Valley. We unpacked, and I'm just sort of sitting around waiting to start work, hanging out with my wife, and we're just gonna start life soon. We probably already have, but it's a weird adjustment, I gotta say.
Yeah, you start work very, very soon. So
in about 5 days.
Yeah, related to that, you know, we originally set out with a plan of releasing this podcast every 2 weeks or so. Obviously, immediately
that
after
really didn't happen.
No, it didn't happen. This is the third episode that we're recording. The first episode went out almost immediately after we recorded it. The second episode we recorded before James's wedding. I flew out there. I was a groomsman. It was a really great time. Before the wedding, we recorded the second episode. It was all finished, all ready to go. And then neither of us really ever got around to posting it. So it's still not up. Soon. By the time you're listening to this, it'll be up because this is the third episode. So we've been very busy, but we still have been kind of getting around game design a little tiny bit. While you've been so busy, what have you been up to in the land of game design, James?
Well, as of yesterday, I have actually started working on things again. So there was almost like a month and a half sort of drought in the middle of working on these things. And so yesterday I was really just working on some cleanup to get back into the groove of things. I was working specifically on Chimeria, my solo project. Just working on some save file management stuff and generally cleaning up the code. Coming back to it, didn't like the way some small things were done, so I was just fixing it up. But yeah, I'd actually like to give, as well right now, a shout out to Defold, the game engineering community that I'm part of with making this game. It's a great free introductory game engine. They don't require any money out of you if you end up somehow being successful. And it's just a really good small community. It can help you out a lot. And it's been a real blessing in doing these projects, being able to just come to them for help and have their support when I mention new updates and talk about life in general. They're there to support everyone. So
myself, for a while, I didn't actually do a whole much in the realm of game design since I was so busy with traveling and trying to find a job. But now that I've gotten settled back down a little bit, I've been jumping back into things. I've been working very slightly on the board game that I was working on that I mentioned in the first episode and in the second episode. I've also very lightly began jumping back into the crypt design work. It's time for a bit of the more nitty-gritty stuff now that we seem to have a lot of the overarching design. We have a lot of the overarching design pillars that we want in the game fleshed out more or less. Obviously, they're subject to change, but we'll see if that happens or not. So now it comes down to the nitty-gritty of actually designing a lot of the more granular things, whether it be monsters, specific weapons, intricacies of how certain system works, so on and so forth. So that's
generally integrating art.
Exactly. So it's a little bit less fun for me right now to do that kind of things, but I'm sure as soon as I get rolling, it'll become a lot more fun. I just got to get the little nudge to get it going. And then here pretty soon, I'm planning on starting another podcast with a friend of mine, focusing on something a little different, but that's just a creative thing that I've been working on that, you know, it excites me. We'll see what happens. So our past life things, we're going to be talking about board games, video games, which we prefer, why. We've already alluded to in the previous episodes that both of us probably have a preference. Both of us have preferences in the medium that we're actually working in. What is it about? First, we figured that we would talk about what is it about both of these mediums that we actually enjoy. James, what about video games do you enjoy as a medium?
Almost everything.
What a cop-out answer. But,
yeah, there we go. We're done. Podcasts, shut it down. Cal, you can't say anything more. Now, for me, I don't know. It probably just harkens back a lot to nostalgia. Because as a not-so-sporty fellow and just pretty much a nerd through and through, it was like the thing I enjoyed growing up. But in a less nostalgic sense, I've come to really appreciate just like the way that a video game can sort of peel away the complexity that you sometimes get in other activities and handle it just with a computer. And you're able to rip a lot of that out and give people a more immersive experience. I think in some ways, I compare like the immersion to like watching a movie, except just slightly more, it's a little more involved. And so like if I were given the choice of watching a movie or playing a game, almost always would pick the game over the movie because I feel like I can get more involved. And I think that's one of the most important things to video games that I enjoy. It's just the ability to jump into a different existence, a different reality, and actually live that out in some way, no matter how stupid or even like thematically boring this thing is. Like playing Tetris, you can still start to ignore everything that's around you and just start playing and just care about nothing else for a while you're stuck in the car with your parents on the way to like Missouri or something.
Mm-hmm.
You can just sort of escape from what's happening around you and let time fly by, and I really enjoy that.
Mm-hmm. As for myself, when it comes to video games as a medium, I've really come to appreciate how wide and varied they can be. There are video games that have almost every theme, explore tons of different mechanics. There are loads and loads of video game only genres to explore, like RTS and MOBAs and all those sort of things. There's just so many things that are possible in the video game sphere that are just kind of phenomenal. And they also have a lot more power to make you hyper invested into something. That's what I really enjoy about them. As for board games, I've really come the main thing about board games that I've really come to appreciate over time is how they can really bring people together. I also really enjoy seeing what designers and developers can do with this many materials. Like, what can people do with 54 cards or 36 cards or 16 cards. Thanks, Love Letter. It's really interesting to me to see what other designers are doing in the board game space and how ingenious people can get. It's one thing about board games that's kind of always interested me more than video games. You see a lot, there's so much time and effort and resources that go into video game creation so much of the time. Mm-hmm. And board games can do a lot of really interesting things with like so much less, if that makes sense. And that's something I really enjoy about board games. James, what do you enjoy about the good old board games?
Well, actually, I just want to talk about that point first, Cal.
Oh, okay, James.
Shuffling us along. Come on now. When it comes to like, I'm going to start with the first one, bringing people together. Yeah, in comparison to video games, I think that's something that I've never fully experienced it in a video game in the same way I have with a board game. Even if a game really tries to, or like some people are really invested in playing this game, when I'm playing Minecraft with my friends, all we're doing is arguing about the way something looks or like screaming at some creepers or something stupid.
Yeah.
And so, but when I'm playing a board game, I feel like I'm coming together a little bit more. And even when playing a game that's a little more strategic or cooperative, like playing Hearts of Iron with some friends or playing Factorio with friends, you still end up becoming so invested into what you're doing that there's no real personal interaction in the middle of that. And it's still, you're trying to succeed at this thing and do this thing. And because you're having the computer doing some of that heavy lifting, the thing I like quite a bit about video games, it can sometimes take away a bit of that personal aspect that you get out of handling physical stuff together and out of like messing with cards.
Would you say that a lot of the same things that you enjoy about board games, you also get out of couch co-op video games?
Yes, I completely miss, I really miss the days of like split screen co-op fun times with the friends. That's like the main thing that got me really invested in video games. Like, it started out me playing lonesome RPGs on my own, because who needs internet and friends, am I right, kids? But there eventually came a time where we were when my friends came and hung out, we were even just playing the same game side by side, especially something like Fallout New Vegas, where we couldn't play together, but because we were playing at the same time, we could like interact with one another as if we were playing the game at the same time.
Yep.
And even that, I guess it's the same feel I get out of a board game, yeah. Except a board game's a little more limited experience of the video game, just because of what I normally play, that could last for hours upon hours upon hours.
Yeah, okay.
But there's something about, like, someone handling your physical stuff in a board game. I think I especially prefer with tabletop games, like card games, because there's just that experience of some Cheeto-fingered rat touching your cards.
Yeah.
That you don't get out of playing a video game. Like, someone touches your controller or whatever, just wipe that thing off, use some Lysol.
Yeah.
But when you're using cards, it's a little different. It's like, there's just a very personal aspect to board games that you just don't get, even in couch co-op.
Mm-hmm. I never really realized how much I appreciated the in-person aspects of board games. How much that part of board games was important for me in playing, like beyond the design and all that kind of stuff, how much the in-person aspects of board games were important to me until the release of Magic the Gathering Arena, which is the digital computer port, very shiny, very chromey implementation of Magic the Gathering on the computer.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Magic the Gathering in the past, you know, for the past 8 years has easily been my most played game. During college, I'd go out every Wednesday and Friday night to play it. I'd play it in between classes with people. You know, when I'm at home, I play it all the time. It's easily, I'm basically a Magic the Gathering super fan. You know, I follow all the pro players on Twitter. I follow all the pro play. I watch coverage every weekend, all that kind of stuff. I've really come to appreciate this game. And I really, really, really enjoy playing this game. It's probably my favorite thing to do. But as soon as Arena came out, you know, I started playing tons of Arena. But then very quickly, I was just kind of sat there and I realized, well, I'm not really having much fun. And so I sat back and I was saying to myself, you know, obviously there's something missing here, because this is the exact same game that I adore playing and consuming content for every other second of the week. But whenever I'm playing Arena, I'm not having that much fun. And eventually I just came to the conclusion that it really was the in-person aspect, you know, sitting across from someone and chatting with them and playing Magic with them and, you know, reacting and them being able to see my reactions to how things were going and seeing how they were reacting, you know.
Yeah, specifically in Magic the Gathering, like in playing Arena, I really enjoyed that it could like help me learn the game rapidly, because you can just play so many games, but it lost my interest in like a session of playing it. It would lose my interest after about 20 minutes.
Yep.
Because there's no, like, I cannot get angry. I cannot get frustrated. I cannot really even enjoy when I do well in it, because there's just no reaction from anyone.
Yeah.
The closest you get are these like comments of like,
nice,
thank you,
good game,
nice. Like, there's no interaction. I'd rather have like a Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2 experience with like a chat mics and some kids screaming at me
yeah
than just nothing or like that. And so With me, even though I don't play Magic, even remotely close to you, my wife has more cards than I do, and she has played less than me. I don't own any cards, but I really enjoy playing the game in person when it does come around. Mm-hmm. But I just can't bring myself to play a game like that for very long in the digital realm.
Makes sense. So, you know, we talked about the things that we like a lot. You know, we like being in person. We like the vast possibilities and all that kind of things that video games can enjoy. But what about these mediums do we dislike? James, what do you dislike about board games?
That's always me. It's always me. What I dislike about board games, I can't make them. You know, there's a start. Mm-hmm. At this point, I prefer making and working on stuff to playing them. Like I said, a lot of my stuff is research, and with my skill set, I prefer to make video games. But a little more serious and accessible sense, with board games, I just don't like that in general, I have to have someone around. Mm-hmm. Like, we just talked, we really like the personal aspect of a lot of board games and in-person interactions, but there's also plenty of times where I just don't want that.
Yeah, and it's outrageous.
I want to be alone.
It's outrageously inconvenient to have to get together seven people to play Game of Thrones, a board game, right?
Yeah. And it's probably even more outrageously difficult to design a good, engaging game for one person.
Yeah.
On tabletop, because you're not able to force them really to do anything.
Yeah.
They can just look ahead and cheat and stuff, and I don't know about you, but like if I don't have something forcing my hand, I'll probably manipulate it.
Mm-hmm.
And so with like a video game, they can run me down a path in a single player experience, and it's great. They can try to do that, and it can keep me in bounds, but with a board game, I have trouble doing it. There's a few things like Solitaire and like Spider Solitaire, and those things that you can play, but those
Spider
aren't
Solitaire.
Strictly engaging. I know.
Yeah.
Spider Solitaire, it's a throwback to XP and 7, I think.
Yeah, mainly XP.
But, like, I really like being able to play a game on my own, video game. And that has a lot to do with the genres I enjoy, though. I really enjoy RPGs, and even though I miss those split-screen experiences, not only for the sake of complexity, but all the games I am currently developing are strictly single-player.
Mm-hmm.
And that's mainly because I want to be able to play them, too.
Yep.
And that's the easiest thing, is to make a game that thrives single player in video game realm. And in board games, you just can't really do that. I also feel like some board games get lost in complexity. Sort of like with video games, I felt like you can have the computer do a lot of that work
mm-hmm.
for you that board games still require you to do. Even though I think that can hurt a lot of games and make them feel too simple, there's a lot of board games that are just so hopelessly complicated that it just almost feels like you'll be like 80% of the way through the 6-hour game, and then you'll find out you've been doing something fundamentally wrong that broke the experience. You're like, oh, this is why it wasn't fun.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. But I also do enjoy sitting down and figuring out, so it's this weird dichotomy of like hating and loving these issues with board games.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think they can just work if they're done in moderation.
Yeah.
So, like, complexity needs to be in a moderate sense. Like, even if it takes me 3 hours to learn a board game, as long as I understand it clearly, I think that 3 hours was worth spending.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, I think, a problem. Once you get to that length of time understanding a game, it gets too difficult. And with a lot of games that are have really short time to learn it, sometimes it's just much too casual for me to play more than once.
Yeah.
Or it's just strictly a party game. And then I'm not really enjoying the game. I'm enjoying the presence of people.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if the game is really contributing all that much other than giving people a reason to show up.
Mm-hmm. For me, you know, there aren't very many things about board games that I could actually say that I dislike. But there are definitely some weaknesses with the medium that I think I've identified, whether just it be like for me or from other people's perspectives. Like, one thing that jumps to mind whenever I think about the weaknesses of board games is Rob Davio, who's one of my favorite designers. He once said, you know, board games in the U.S. Are like bowling. Most people do it a few times a year, and then they say, man, that was fun. We should do that more often. But, you know, there's a reason that they don't do that more often, right? A really big part of it is like what you were just talking about. A lot of board games that are really worth playing or worth playing repeated times, and you're going to have a really good time every time you do it, you know, they're complicated. It's a very physical format. you, as the players, are responsible for keeping up with everything. If you miss the rules, you know, the non-existent computer isn't going to stop you and say, wait, you're doing that wrong. If someone's cheating, you know, cheating is a whole different other thing. But board games can be complicated. Even the most simple games, if you don't look at the rule book close enough, you can play the game completely wrong and have a bad experience, right?
Yeah.
One of the first times I ever played Sushi Go, which is like the most simple. It's a fairly well designed game. It's a fairly well designed drafting game, you know, where you pick different sushi rolls and chopsticks and wasabi and all this different things. And depending on what you pick, you get points. If you have three of this many kind, you get points. And if you have two but not three of that kind, you don't get any points. But if you have three, you get lots of points, so on and so forth. The first time I played that game with a group of people, we had one rule fundamentally wrong. I don't remember what rule it was, but one of the cards we were playing incorrectly or something like that. And I was just like, wow, that card seems useless. Why would anyone ever pick that card?
It was probably the pudding.
It was either pudding or chopsticks. I don't remember which of the two it was. Either if one of the cards was being played incorrectly. Our group misunderstood how the card was supposed to work. And I was like, wow, that card is useless. Why would anyone ever pick that card? And that started, you know, the realm in my brain called, wow, I can break this game. How did they not catch this in development? Blah, blah, blah. But it all just came down in the end. We were just playing the card wrong. It was our fault. We didn't read the rules correctly, or we misinterpreted the rules and all that kind of thing. And it was, you know, our fault. That's probably my biggest gripe with video games, is the thing you mentioned. Like, rules can be so ambiguous. The games themselves are so complicated.
You mean your problem with board games? You said video games.
Sorry, board games. Yeah, my problem with board games is that, you know, rules are difficult, right? Even if they're simple, even if they're really simple, even the most simple rules can be misconstrued. You can never write the perfect rule book, in my opinion, because no matter what you write, some people out there will be able to misinterpret it to mean something else. Yeah.
And even bringing back something from a previous episode, Mansions of Madness, we mentioned, tried to do a hybrid of using a digital and a tabletop to try, I guess, sort of to enforce rules. But I remember, Cal, your main complaint with that was that it seemed to not even try to really enforce the rules.
Yeah,
in the digital realm, so it didn't even solve the issue that we're talking about.
Yeah, the major, major benefit that they had of using a digital implementation was being able to use it some to enforce some of the rules, and they didn't even do that. That was the biggest miss of the game for me.
Mm-hmm.
But disliking video games, on the other hand, well, I have one more thing to say about board games. You know, I just said that getting together with people for board games is its biggest strength, right? But now that I'm becoming older, I'm getting more busy. My friends are becoming more busy,
even during college. Away.
Yeah, exactly. And even during college, this was a problem too. Just like board games, to play a board game, unless it's one of the very, 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 very few phenomenal one-player board games, you have to get together people to play, and that's difficult. I can't sit down and play a board game whenever I want to. I have to, you know, get in contact with 10 people to get a four-player game together to be played the Saturday after next, right? Mm-hmm. And that's just a little annoyance compared to video games, right? Where anytime I want to play a video game, I can step up to my computer or my Switch or my PS4, and I can turn it on, and I can be like, ah, yes, which of my 30 games do I want to play right now?
30? That's really weak, Cal.
Yeah, I know. Try like 650. But yeah, as far do you want to answer what you dislike about video games first, or do you want me to do it?
You go for it. We'll keep this.
Sure, I'll go for it. Yeah,
you seem like you're on a roll. Here we go.
Oh yeah, I'm chugging. Choo choo. I can talk about things I dislike all day long. as far as things about video games that I dislike, actually, a large amount of my complaints with video games have kind of been erased over the last good while. A lot of my complaints with video games would have used to have been... Okay, no, never mind. My complaint largely still stands.
He's back.
My largest complaint with... Yeah, exactly. My largest complaint with video games as a medium in comparison to board games, say, is that so many of the largest video games copy so many mechanics from each other. So many mechanics from each other. And it's just completely and totally accepted by the community, right? Maybe it's more of a community thing, but they don't get punished for it. And so it perpetuates itself. We've talked about this in previous podcast episode. You know, every AAA game has a crafting mechanic. Yeah, exactly. Every AAA game has like semi-open world going on these days. Every open world game has almost every AAA game is action-based and adventuring-based, right? From a mechanical level, at the very pillars, they're all very similar, even if they have like different skins and different more granular things on top of them. That's probably my biggest complaint with video games. Indie video games, they're awesome, right? There's so much innovation and stuff going on the indie level and all that kind of thing. But yeah, that's my complaint with video games as a medium.
Yeah, on that comment you said with indie games, I think you were saying, oh, it's like maybe more the crowd that has this problem of perpetuating what the AAA games are doing. I think what probably happened was that for a while people were starting to like that, and then they started not liking it. And that's why the indie games even exist. Because, I mean, growing up, I didn't know a single thing about non-like mainline titles of some sort, or at least the main developers. I mean, Ubisoft used to make stuff like Prince of Persia. You know, it's not like a super mainline nowadays, but it was pretty big when it came out. It was like a thing. But then, so like these bigger studios were being innovative, but then they dropped the ball because money, and we see more indie games coming out and actually getting support that they never would have gotten before. And I think it's basically because of distribution platforms and people getting sick of it, people like you and I.
I think a big part of what like caused both of those things was several shifts in the video game world happening all at once. Because, you know, for the longest time, the most popular way to consume video games was through consoles, which had very large gatekeepers, right? Whether it be the manufacturer of the console itself, or the very few massive, massive publishers that actually had the money to distribute a game for that platform.
Yeah.
Where with the rise of computer gaming and games like, you know, platforms like Steam or just the internet in general, more and more indie developers were able to rise. Well, at the same time, these large publishers kept making their games bigger and bigger and bigger to the point where they're spending, you know, $10 million on developing them and $10 million in advertising. And at that point, they are by far the most incentivized to make safe choices so that they don't blow up all $20 million of their dollars.
Yeah.
Ah, so the problem is with capitalism.
Of course. It's always capitalism's fault, Kyle. Didn't you know?
I've already said that twice in three episodes. No!
No. Yeah, I think my biggest problem with video games, I don't want to just say it's yours, so I think I'll just try and summon something else up. Let's see here. They're hard to make.
No, I mean, no. I think that is a fairly large critique a fair complaint, from more of a design perspective or a creative perspective, right?
Because here's the problem with it is that a lot of people are like, yeah, making a game, that should be like accessible for everyone, right? Yeah, absolutely not. It actually requires you to either understand programming like quite well or be totally satisfied with making a very basic experience. And I want to go back to Flash games for a second. The only reason Flash games came around and sort of created this platform by which we now have indie games, the only reason we got all these Flash games is because Adobe decided to make an incredible editing tool that abstracted everything away from people. So people who knew nothing could make these great experiences, whether they be interactive or not. And they could very easily get these things out to people, and with basically no need to scour the internet for how to do this thing in C++. They could just like use this very simple language to construct this game. And so we saw something very accessible, but with the death of Flash and all this other stuff that sort of fell apart. And mm-hmm. we've seen it taken up by some software developers have created replacements. Something like, probably best example is like Game Maker Studio.
Yeah, like Game Maker or RPG Maker are probably the two closest things.
Exactly. And RPG Maker, I don't know much about it, but it seems to have fallen a lot by the wayside in a lot of ways. It's
a lot more focused and has become like a lot more niche focused of a tool than it has in the past.
Yeah, it's the reason that all these RPGs, like these weird JRPGs, all look exactly the same throughout Steam that you're pestered to buy. Like, it seems to be part of that whole like realm now. But then, like with Game Maker, there have been some pretty incredible titles to come out of it. So stuff like Undertale and Spelunky, and those were like made by people who didn't really have a good background in programming at all, and they did the very basic amount of stuff that they had to do to get the thing working, but that is providing some kind of platform for these people to jump in with. But no matter what, there will come a point where you can't do a thing in a game unless you know how to program and program like well and very complicated things. And so it's, as a medium, just sort of forces you to have either be okay limiting yourself or find people to do this thing for you and find capital to do it. Because there's plenty of like these great game minds in gaming that we think of, like that. What's his name? Hideo Kojima with Metal Gear. I don't know if he's ever been really involved with like the programming side of things, but I know he, at least in recent Metal Gear stuff and with the new game that I completely forget the name of. What is it, Carol?
Death Stranding.
Yeah, Death Stranding. He's generally like, he's more of like a story director and just like a world creator. He doesn't have to touch anymore. It's because he has the capital to do it at this point. And so it, as a platform, is harder for random like 15-year-old person who wants to create a game. They can't just like jump in and make a good video game. But they could probably jump in and make a crappy little board game with some paper and pen.
Yeah.
And that would probably be, as especially a developer who's been trying to make, who's been working on three different games for a while now. Like, it's definitely my major complaint is that I have spent a lot of time just getting things to work when I wish I could just sort of summon these things into existence. It's just so much of a framework I have to build to get anything working, really.
Yep. No, that's the real big kicker, right? To make to make a video game, like, I can't make a video game anywhere near on my own. I can make like the most basic video game ever because I know some Java, and I know some C#, and I know, you know, JavaScript, right? I could make the most basic video game.
Of Come all on, time Cal. Really you made Pinochle.
You Woo! Need a buggy. C#.
A buggy doesn't actually obey all the rules of Pinochle.
I'll have you know, I got an A- on that project. Thank you very much.
Doesn't mean you should have.
But you know, if I want to, I could make a game with, you know, these coins that I have sitting on my desk and five sheets of paper and a pen. You know. If I really put my mind to it and thought about it for like more than 30 seconds, I could mess around with those materials and ta-da, I would have a game to play. So I know, I guess now we've come to the part of episode where we talk about which of the two we prefer. Maybe personally, maybe from a design perspective. Why not both, you know? I know me personally, probably even around the time when we started this podcast, I probably would have said from a personal perspective, I enjoyed playing board games more, or I liked board games more as a medium of a whole, but I think that's like evolved over the last month or so. Definitely for a lot of the time during college, I was kind of in a rut where I wasn't actually enjoying playing a lot of video games, or the video games I was actually enjoying playing were just like games with my friends, like League of Legends, or playing Magic against people, or playing Minecraft with people.
Yeah.
But over the last, you know, month or so, while trying to make myself play games to, you know, get ideas for games and see what other people out there are doing, I've really come back to enjoy playing video games again, where in that same time period, besides, you know, Friday Night Magic, I haven't gotten the chance to play any board games at all. And even if I had the chance, I probably just would have been like, let's do this next week, you know? But from a design perspective, board games are definitely my jam. I would love to create board games, both from the accessibility side. Like I just said, I can't really make video games, so board games are my option. So,
but you can help make a video game.
Yeah, I can help design.
I need your help making a video game.
if I'm on a team or whatever, then I would definitely love to contribute sort of video game like I already am doing. But I'm loving designing board games, and I would love to design more board games in the future. What about you, James?
I think from both sides. So from a personal perspective, I don't think I've ever preferred board games to video games, and I don't know if that'll ever change. I've pretty much always been on the video game side. Granted, growing up, I really did enjoy the nights where we'd play the game of life or Monopoly. but I think in the end, I always would have just been like, but I could play Metroid Prime. But I could play The Legend of Alundar because it's so bad it's good. Like, there's just something about me being able to sit down and just experience these different things. And I even just like seeing how games have like evolved. So like just the other day, I was showing my wife various N64 games, sort of so she would understand some memes, but also just to sort of introduce her to them and to play them again myself. So I like showed her Super Mario 64. I showed her some Donkey Kong 64, one of my favorites, with the classic DK rap. And then, yeah, Donkey Kong. And then I played Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time for a good bit of time. I got to where Sheikah was escorting me out of the castle and says, hey, go to the Death Mountain. I'm like, okay, I'll do that, I guess. and it was nice seeing, like, even just the evolution amongst those games, seeing how they, like, influenced one another, and then moving on to some PS2 titles, like Musashi Samurai Legend. Mm-hmm. And Dragon Ball Z Budokai 3, and just sort of seeing these like classic someone thought of these mechanics, and these are, I don't know, it's just generally really interesting, especially now as a programmer. I appreciate them even more because I can start visualizing what I think the code is like, and like what did they decide to do with this, and how would they have like decided to organize these things. But with board games, and from a design perspective, even though video games frustrate me greatly when it comes to coding them, they're also just incredibly enjoyable for me because they are a great challenge. I've heard from multiple different sources, none of them probably legitimate, that video game development is some of, if not like the hardest kind of programming that you can do, because you have to account for so much of what these people are doing, and you have to accomplish what we said before about keeping them on track. Because with a video game, you don't have a choice. You must keep them on track. So you must design them. You must design the game in such a way that the player cannot break out of it. Because when people can break out of it, they laugh at you. They laugh at your game for that. And so, and I've never really made board games, so I can't really have an opinion really on the making of it. But even though I am almost certain a video game is more frustrating for me to make, it is also, I think, much more rewarding for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, makes a lot of sense. Well, I mean, we talked about what we planned on discussing. Yeah, you got anything else to say?
I'll probably play Musashi Samurai Legend tonight.
Oh, boy. Yeah, I'll probably bang my head against Magic the Gathering Arena tonight.
We could also play Magic the Gathering Arena together.
Oh, that could happen. Say it ain't so.
Oh, no.
Anyway, you know, thanks for chatting, James. It was a good time. Where can people contact you?
They can contact me. And now at my new email address. Oh, we haven't explained this. My wife and I both changed our names. So in California, you can blend your names together. So we took our two last names, took a substring from one, took a substring from another. If you don't know what those mean, search them up online. It's really simple to figure it out. And then we created a new last name, Orson. So crazy. So the email you can reach me at now is actually jamesaorson at Gmail. So jamesaorson. You can also reach me on some kind of Twitter handle that I don't ever remember because I'm really bad at this thing. I think, I remember, Jamsborne, JAMZBORNE.
Yeah.
So there we go. Those are the best ways.
You can find me on Twitter at Caljoones, Caljoones, or you can follow me on Instagram if you want. I am at the official CalPal. Yeah, thanks for listening, everyone.
You have a fan club now.
Oh, yeah, you know. Someone started a fan club account for me on Instagram. It's kind of creepy.
It is a little creepy. I follow it, though, so it's fine.
I don't. Anyway, thanks for listening, guys. Okay. I'll see you next Monday in 2 Mondays.
Yeah.